Hello and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian. If you'd like to support the show, please go to buymeacoffee.com/requiredreading. Our guest today is Delaney Searcy. She is an actor, director, and intimacy director for theater living in Atlanta. Delaney holds a dual degree in trauma psychology and theater from Bennington College and is a founding member of the theater collective Normal House. She's one of my favorite people in the world. Hello.
It's so nice to be here. You're also one of my favorite people in the world.
Oh, I'm so excited we could do this.
Me
Our
too.
book today is a picture book, The Mysteries of Harris Burdick by Chris Van Allsburg from 1984. To set the scene, 1984, Steve Jobs launches the Macintosh personal computer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A research team at Harbor UCLA Medical Center announced history's first embryo transfer from one woman to another, resulting in a live birth. Cirque du Soleil is founded, and I did not know this, is Canadian.
Hey, that's actually very shocking.
Liechtenstein becomes the last country in Europe to grant women the right to vote.
Okay. I feel
1984.
like we haven't heard a lot from them since. So.
The Chrysler Corporation introduces the first vehicles to be officially labeled as minivans,
Oh.
and Thomas the Tank Engine and Friends debuts.
Wow.
Chris Van Allsburg won two Caldecott medals for U.S. picture book illustration for his big two, Jumanji and The Polar Express. This guy's huge. He's from a Dutch family in East Grand Rapids, Michigan. He majored in sculpture, and his studio was unsuccessful. And his wife saw his sketches and said, "You should work in children's books." And this book comes out in 84. In 94, a version comes out with like full stories from 14 different authors to go along with each one. And 5 years after this is published, he works on The Little Mermaid as a visual development artist, which I thought was cute.
Very diverse resume, like a lot of different projects happening there and a lot of different tones, like very fascinating.
So, what's your story with this book? How did it come into your life?
So as obviously many of us do, I had a teacher in elementary school that changed my life. It was my fourth grade teacher. His name was Brian Blaylock, and he had frosted tips and a little goatee, and I think about him often. So thank you, Brian. And he was kind of unpopular with the school board in terms of, like, we were in fourth grade and he was reading us Edgar Allan Poe. And so a lot of the moms were freaking out about hearing about Telltale Heart and, like, my kids don't need to know about this. And of course, like, me was the one weirdo in the class that was eating it up. And like, he and I just had a really great relationship, really great rapport, and was one of the first people that made me feel like I could be a writer, be a creator, and like it was okay to celebrate weird and dark and macabre things. So, in our little Halloween unit of reading with Edgar Allan Poe, he introduced this book. And there's a whole crazy, like, sort of intro backstory at the top of the book, essentially saying that, like, the author had met this man who had this collection of stories that was never published, that was dropped off at his studio from another mysterious man who was like, I'll come back with the stories tomorrow, and then never did. He vanished in the night. And so there's, like, this whole kind of like Lemony Snicket-esque, like, fake story going on. But yeah, he read us this book, and the book is formatted. It's pictures with, like, one sentence captions for each thing. And so the idea is you would take that one sentence and start a story with that, or incorporate that and base a short story off of it. So our class got to writing. I just took it and ran because all the pictures, they're very beautiful. It's these really detailed black and white images, but there's this, like, real sense of dread and eeriness to a lot of them. Some of them are really beautiful. Some of them are really, I don't know, I would say lighter than others. But overall, there's just, like, a weird sense of tension going on with all of them. So I wrote this one short story for one of them in there, which is called Under the Rug, which is this guy in, like, a 1950 suit slicing, like, a basketball-sized lump in the carpet of his house on the floor. My teacher thought it was really great, ended up getting sent to, like, this writer's camp at, like, a local college. And so it was, like, me and a bunch of, like, college-age kids, which was very cool. My story ends up getting published. And after the story got published, I looked and saw they had made a bunch of edits and they had cut out, like, all of the gore and murder that I had put into it. And they're like, this is inappropriate for an 8-year-old to publish. And I'm like, okay, then don't publish my story.
Yeah.
Like, this was, like, the beginning of fan fiction for me, essentially.
Oh man, I love that. I loved this book so much. I had never read it. I think I had like heard of it, maybe. There's something about the illustration style that felt familiar,
Yes.
but it is, I immediately loved this book because it is eerie. It's odd. It has lore. I love a book with a backstory
Oh,
and with its own
absolutely. Yeah.
lore. And it is such an invitation to imagine, which is, I think, like the best thing it can be. I think it's perfect for classrooms to start discussion. And I think it, like you said, it's eerie. It's unsettling. Some of it is like very obviously like danger is afoot. And some of it is just sort of like slightly different. I think it's such a great starting point for so many young people for
Oh, of
whatever
course.
path they end up going down. Yeah.
There's even one of the illustrations in there too. I think a Stephen King short story was based off of one of them. It's like the
Yeah.
house on Maple Street or something. So like even, you know, a lot of popular writers have pulled from the source, but the fact that like it's the genesis of a Stephen King story feels pertinent, you know, feels interesting.
Exactly. Absolutely. And he sold the rights, I think, in 2019 to this. I don't remember to
Oh yeah.
who.
Oh, for like a movie or TV adaptation or something?
Yeah, Disney and 20th Century Fox in
Is
2019. Yeah.
random.
Acquired the rights to this and another book of his called The Garden of Abdul Ghazazi, but he is not an EP for Harris Burdick. He is on the other one, but not for this one. Very interesting.
Yeah, I could imagine them that they're making some kind of movie version out of it, being kind of like a more adult Goosebumps sort of vibe. And I'm curious
Yeah.
who would go with that. I really hope they don't try to tone it down because it's Disney, though.
Exactly. I really want to do Goosebumps also on this show. It's just like, it's September 2nd. Halloween has begun.
I'm sure everybody has like their Goosebumps.
Yeah.
I was terrified of Slappy.
Oh, okay. I did not get into Goosebumps a lot. And one additional thing, when I was in utero before I was born, I was referred to as Slappy.
Why? Did you
I
slap your
don't
mom's stomach a
know.
lot?
I don't know.
You know who Slappy is, though, right? It's
No.
It's the ventriloquist doll you see on all the covers of the Goosebumps book.
Wow.
And like the concept is like Slappy has gets his revenge and he like tries to kill his ventriloquist. It's
Oh my God. Do you feel like there was something specifically like 90s about creepy ventriloquist dolls? Because there was a great season one
Yes.
Buffy episode about that.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. And I don't really know what that was. I mean, my grandparents to this day really love ventriloquist dolls. They're Mennonite, and there is something about the Mennonite community that really gravitates towards that. I couldn't tell you why. A lot of churches in the Mennonite culture will have like a ventriloquist doll to like talk about the stories of the Bible, which, I mean, that's a horror movie in itself, I think.
Yeah. Well, now I have to sit with that for a long time.
I
There's
gotta
a story.
explore that in a screenplay.
Oh my gosh. And like you said, each image is just a spread of image, title, and a tiny caption. And so I have a PDF of it. I must include it in the show notes because like you have to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Such amazing images. The first one is called Archie Smith, Boy Wonder. And the caption is, a tiny voice asked, is he the one? And the image is this little boy in bed and these five like orbs of light coming in through the window as he's sleeping. Wow.
Images are so beautiful. For the sake of like, I think this would make such an interesting collage wall to have all like the Burdick on one wall.
Oh, absolutely. And this drove me crazy because I remember some picture book that I had about like floating orbs coming into a
Again, I
room.
think that is a reoccurring theme in children's literature.
And they had like faces and the vibe generally was like Dippin' Dots almost of like circular colors coming in and I cannot find it. Like I can't think of it,
What
you
was the
know?
tone? Was it like cheerful? Because it all
Yes.
sounds familiar.
It was sort of whimsical of like things that come alive at night and it's not scary.
I mean, I think there's something to explore there. I hope
I know.
somebody listening can find that for you.
I know. I'm going back to my parents' house in a couple weeks and I feel like it must be gone by now, but hopefully I'll find it because I'm going to be there while my parents are on a cruise. I'm cap sitting for them. So I'm so excited to go through everything, to snoop, to reorganize,
Oh
to
my
get
gosh.
in it, be annoying.
Of like looking through their cabinets and pantry and see how they organize
Yes.
things now. Oh my gosh.
Exactly.
Yeah. Favorite
Yeah.
thing. That's why I loved babysitting.
And so I love this image because, I mean, it's like I said, it's an invitation to imagine. It can go in so many directions. It is both whimsical and fun and menacing and threatening. I think each of these images is just so rich in the details. There's like so much you can, there's a boat on the wall above him. There's a baseball bat in the window. You can spend hours with these images individually if you want to.
Sure. And I think the timeline they're kind of set in super nebulous as well. Like, as I mentioned earlier, I think some of these skew kind of like more towards 50s. They have sort of like that retro vintage quality about them. But like a lot of these could just be, you know, they could be set at any time, which is kind of fascinating. Like I just want to know what the through line was for him in creating this. Was it truly just, I have inspiration for these drawings, I'm going to do it and let kids run with it? Or it's like, was there something going on there that we're supposed to be picking up on? I don't know.
There's something very, universal to all of them. And sort of like, there's a degree of like classic Americana that goes with a lot of them. It's like, it's a unnerving Norman Rockwell, you know?
I was about to say, it's very Norman Rockwell. Uh-huh.
That's synergy. The next one in my copy is Under the Rug, which is the one that you mentioned. It's called Under the Rug. 2 weeks passed and it happened again. And it's this man holding a chair above this lump.
George Costanza sort of figure.
This is exactly the truth. I think I've seen this sometimes as the cover image for this book. This is a very iconic one to me.
Yeah. I don't know why this one stood out to me so much as a kid, but I feel like this is the one that most people remember. And I think it's, I don't know, the idea of it like being in your home, like, you know, making the familiar unfamiliar, like the Brechtian element of it. I don't know.
Absolutely. I was in a cinema studies class in college and my professor said, this is from Del Toro, but said that the core elements of horror are the absence of something familiar or the presence of something unfamiliar. And I think it's often the more mundane and simple you can get and then slightly veer off, I think it makes it the creepiest possible, you know?
And I think that's why horror is so much more interesting and so much more rich as a child, because obviously it's seen as this weird taboo thing. Like, it's an adult thing that kids aren't willing, like, shouldn't explore. But at the same time, so much is unknown to you as a child. So everything kind of has this element of the unfamiliar, the horror. So, I mean, for how rampant a kid's imagination is, it makes sense that like you would naturally gravitate towards what's creepy and what's unknown.
Yeah. Like you said, there's so much you don't know. And I think even if, like, no matter what, I think you as a child pick up on your parents' anxieties. Like, you understand that, like, you are in some kind of danger, kind of always.
Yeah.
Which I think didn't leave me, at least.
No, absolutely not. Anxious kids are always horror kids. It's pretty interchangeable.
I think, like, applying narrative to it makes things make more sense and makes things, like, less scary.
Sure, you're trying to contextualize it for yourself, of course, yeah.
Yeah. And I love all of these images are very in media res, picking up mid-scene.
Absolutely.
But I don't know. I think this was interesting to me because I didn't lean a lot into, I think, the scary and the mysterious and the unknown. I think it was like very unnerving to me and I didn't it.
I mean, yeah, I was the kid that like, I loved reading Edgar Allan Poe, but then my parents would put on the news and I would like go hide under the chair for 40 minutes sobbing because I didn't want to hear like someone's house getting broken into. Like, it was always a weird dichotomy of like, it had to be surreal for me to enjoy it, you know?
Right. That's interesting. The book that I kept thinking of with this one was another picture book that I had when I was young. And my mom is a historian who, when I was very young, was studying like Russia and the former Soviet Union and had a lot of friends who were either Russian or like Yugoslavian or from the area. And so someone gave me a picture book of a Russian fairy tale about, it's called The Nose, where a man goes to a barber one day and his nose gets cut off. And then the next morning, his nose is now a full human sized nose, but like 6 feet tall and wandering around, like living his life.
Like anthropomorphic?
Yes, a 6 foot tall nose in like a Russian bear cap and like aristocratic jacket running around town. And he has to go like stop his nose and get his nose back on his face. And so
I hate that.
Yeah. It's, I'll try to find him.
Was it supposed to be silly? Like, haha, there goes his nose.
Well, it's Russian, so like, is it both? You know?
Yeah, it's a whole different thing.
I'm gonna send this to you over text
Yeah.
because it's one of those things now. It's like, who thought this was a good idea? It's based on a short story by
Oh,
Nikolai Gogol.
it looks like one large navy bean. That's crazy. It's dressed like Napoleon. Wow.
I'm excited to get my hands on it again in a couple
My
days.
God, yeah. Did you ever there's like a very old German set of fairy tales that they've turned into like a million different types of like children's books and plays and musicals called Shock-Headed Peter.
No, I don't know this.
And it's like essentially a group of fables where it's like, this kid was playing with the scissors on his mom's desk one day, but then he snipped off his thumb, so don't ever touch scissors or all your fingers are going to fall off. Like it was very like cautionary tales sort of thing.
Yeah.
But they're always illustrated in like the most shocking and violent imagery possible. And it's very reminiscent of the nose of Harris Burdick. Like I don't know what's going on in Europe, but they know too much when it comes to children's literature.
Yeah, a lot of dark woods and mysterious things going on. Very dark winters.
Well,
Yeah.
didn't you say Christmann Alsberg, did you say Swedish or Danish? Did I make that up?
Dutch.
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 Okay.
Well, and also grew up in Michigan, which is dark and cold and mysterious, I assume. I haven't been to
I
Michigan.
know nothing about Michigan, just many a
Yeah.
lake.
Although I just learned, because college football started this weekend, University of Michigan's football stadium is the largest stadium in the Western Hemisphere.
Oh, like period.
Period.
That's too
Period.
much. Why? It's a lot of pomp and circumstance. Yeah,
Right? It's sort of like, ha, America loves football, but it's sort of like, yeah, we do. Yeah,
yeah.
that's it. That's us. And sometimes it's really fun.
Yeah, I mean the actual like love of the sport miss me, but like the pageantry that comes with it, that's fun.
Yes.
That's I mean,
Yeah.
I grew up in the South. You did too. Like you know that vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. It was not Friday Night Lights for me, but it like certainly was for my parents. And both my parents were
Oh,
in band
for
and
sure.
yeah.
Like mom's making a pot of chili. It's cold outside. My dad's glued
Yes.
to the TV for a couple hours. Like there's something familiar and comforting about that.
Yeah. Although this has been on my mind recently, as someone from the South, did you grow up with ambrosia, where it's like jello with fruit and marshmallows in it?
So my family never made it because like my parents came from Pennsylvania, so like I'm the
Right.
first generation Southern, but like yes, it's very church potluck kind of food.
Yes. That's so interesting that you're the first generation Southern, because I'm the reverse. I'm the first person born like out of Kentucky, Tennessee area. I was born in
Interesting.
DC.
Okay. Wait, so was it
Yeah.
big for your family? They eat a lot of that?
Yeah, like whenever I would go to my grandparents' house, yeah. It's one of my favorite. I was a vegetarian up until I was like 21, up until I moved to LA. So every year that I would go to my grandparents' house, they did not understand how to feed a vegetarian. So it would be like ambrosia and like a bag of chips and a banana. And they'd be like, there's something there. Here's a block of cheese. Figure it out.
The thing about ambrosia is it's always like a little bit more savory than you're expecting. Like there's always like a little bit too much sour cream or something in there, and it's like, I don't know about the tang, guys. It's very much a mystery.
Yeah, very much a mystery. Exactly. The next image in my copy is A Strange Day in July, which is two kids skipping stones. And it says, he threw with all his might, but the third stone came skipping back. I love the high contrast in these images. I love the shadows. The faces are almost always hidden.
To say this one somehow seems the most pleasant out of all of them.
Absolutely.
You know,
Absolutely.
like we're just seeing like the shimmering of the water, these two kids kind of on like the riverbank, I'm assuming. They're both in like little Sunday clothes. The girl has like cute little Mary Janes and socks on. Like even with the idea of like the stone came skipping back, I'm sure there's something in the water. This feels very like, oh, a lovely mermaid's gonna come out and chat with them. It's giving Frosty the Snowman, you know, like it feels
Oh,
pleasant.
absolutely. Yeah. It reminds me of, again, like being at my grandparents' and sitting. My mom is from a very small town in Western Kentucky. It's like as far west as you can get before you get into the Mississippi River. And The last time I was there, last time I was there was for a funeral. The time before that, when everyone was still alive, we went to the Mississippi just to stand there. And I was throwing rocks and hit just a dead fish just floating on the water. And it made like the most satisfying sound. It was like 18, 19 at the time.
Did it bounce back or did it just kind of stay slapped against the skin?
Oh, it might have just stayed there. It was very underwhelming, you know. It was a thing of like, yeah, this is the quilt capital of the world, you know. This is
okay. I have to know because I feel like every river in America smells terrible. What does the Mississippi smell like?
Oh, I don't really remember, but it certainly does not look nice at all. It's like where my mom is from is where I think the Ohio and the Mississippi meet. So okay. It's like it was like a very big. For like shipping, but no like life ever came up around it, you know?
Yeah. Wasn't like people hanging by the watering hole kind of vibe.
No, or it was like 10 people a century ago and it's like 15 now, you know?
Yeah.
My grandfather was the town historian and wrote the book on the town twice. And everyone goes, how was there enough for two books? How did you like miss anything, John?
Get John on the pod talking about his books.
I know, RIP. Although he was, when I was in ninth grade. Yeah, he dead. They're all dead. It's okay. They're all dead. It's okay. but he was on an episode. It was like the first brush with fame was ninth grade. He was on an episode of Who Do You Think You Are? The genealogy show.
Oh, yeah.
There was a football player who had an ancestor who was from Paducah, Kentucky, and had like been on the railroad or like worked in the railroad. And that was one of my grandfather's first jobs. I have to brag, my grandfather's first job, he was like 13. He got his barber's license so he could work in his mother's salon. I think
13?
It's the soonest age you can qualify for the license. It was so cute.
That is baller. Yeah.
I know, adorable. Your grandparents are fascinating, you know? They're
oh, absolutely. And you'll never truly know them as long as you do know them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's a very fascinating person, especially like he's a historian. My mom is a historian. It's very interesting to look at how historians tell their own story and what they include and what they don't include.
Oh, that's a really interesting point. Like when your mom, like when you hear her like recount stories of your childhood, like is there any like level of like professional detachment that you sense from her? Like, is she able to like fill that role of like, I'm a mom now, I can turn the historian brain off? Or what does that feel like?
Not for my mom. The thing that was always really interesting about my grandfather, at least, and maybe like you have to have that like generation of distance to know.
Sure.
My grandfather, his dad died when my grandfather was like a couple months old, very young. Mm-hmm. And that was suicide. And when my grandfather would write his biography, like he was published all over the place, he like wrote his biography a lot. Never, ever, ever mentioned his father. It was always like son of Glendola Lever, period.
So just like redacted it completely.
Exactly. And so like, and there was family stuff, like they ended up going to like his dad's family at one point to ask for financial support and they said no. It's his last name, you know, and we don't know anything about that side of the family. It's my middle name and we don't know anything about that side of the family. It's really interesting. Yeah.
Families are a mystery.
I know. The next one I have is Missing in Venice, which is a Venice canal with a giant, giant like ship crashing into the buildings. Yeah. And it says, even with her mighty engines in reverse, the steam liner was pulled further and further into the canal. And for some reason, this one was comedic to me.
Yeah, I agree. It's giving like superhero public property destruction. You know? It's like that's all I can focus on when I watch Marvels. I'm like, I know that is costing the city millions and millions of dollars. People are displaced.
I know the tax dollars that Marvel has to spend is not accounted for. But yeah, there's something funny about it, and there's something about the title of Missing in Venice that I think is just now hitting me. Of like, we're trying to find someone, and it's going horribly wrong.
Or high water, I'm getting this boat through.
Exactly. We are going through the city of Venice rather than searching it. Yeah, there's just something. I think this is one of the ones that's also like on the lighter end, like you said.
Yeah, and this is interesting too, because I think it was like a few years after this was originally published, author came back out and was like, oh, I found another drawing that wasn't in the original.
Yes.
And it's a part two of this one. It's like, of all the ones to pull from, I feel like this is maybe the least compelling. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. This is one that I like did not, I think I was looking a few like minutes before we logged on. And I
Yeah.
was like, this one I didn't remember. There are some where you're like begging for more information.
Absolutely.
And this is not one of them.
Mm-mm.
But again, I love that like the whole book is like a classroom exercise, sort of like wrapped in a bow of like, sit down and figure this out, like write it. And I'm
Sure.
imagining them on a classroom wall. It's just, and you said that this was a Halloween unit. I love it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It was interesting to see, like, obviously, I don't remember everything, but like what kids gravitated towards. And it was like, who was the writer that wanted to take on the bigger challenge? Like you said, some of these stories write themselves a lot easier than others. And yeah, people that picked this one were always like the lightweights. Do the work, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I think that the next one sort of falls into that also, which is often a cover I see, another place, another time. If there was an answer, he'd find it there. And it's
Yeah.
this like railroad track on the ocean going off into the distance, and four kids on a little cart with a sail. And one of them has the like the prototypical little sailor boy hat with a little tail on the end of it. And I think it's like it's adorable. This feels very, I mean, I'm a big Wizard of Oz head, and this feels exactly like
Yeah.
that.
Feels a little Lost Boys-ish.
Yes.
There's also
Yeah.
like very faintly in the right, like bottom right corner-ish, there's like the outline of a castle too.
Yeah.
Like this
Yeah.
feels very classic children's storybook.
It, like I love to every once in a while just pull out my like I went to an art school cap and be like the, you know, the center of this is this very dark sail right dead center with this really heavy cloud over it. Like the lightest parts are like this layer of mist on the ocean.
Yeah.
Really just like every individual piece is so wonderful, and then they come together as this delicious. It makes me think of the moment in Ratatouille when Remy first eats the cheese and the
He's the
strawberry
strawberry?
together.
God. The title kind of suggests, like, are the kids time traveling? Like, it feels kind of like Magic
Yes.
Treehouse adjacent in that sense, too.
Yeah, I walked past a Magic Treehouse book on the ground the other day on the sidewalk. The title of that one was The Summer of the Sea Serpent. And I was like, oh, this is, I wish I had this phrase 3 months ago.
I can visualize that right now. Honestly, the fact that you seem to walk past that seems very serendipitous. Like, I feel like you're going to come back to that.
I know there's so many little free libraries in my neighborhood. This was not
Oh.
in one of them. This was just like a lot of people will just like leave out, I'm done with this stuff on the
It's always
sidewalk.
like Tom Clancy war novels or, you
Oh
know,
my
like
God.
a couple different like Bibles. You know, it's never anything you actually want, or a lot of like pulp romance from the 70s.
Yes. I love a used bookstore, and I was just in Boise, Idaho for the first time, which was very cute. Loved it. However, the used bookstores in Boise, Idaho that I went to were just like Tom Clancy and romance novels. It was a little disappointing.
That's a
They had
shame.
other nice stuff too. They had really good fries, as you would hope.
Surprise. Okay, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Their license plates, unless you get like a special, like the special, like save the pets kind, they all say famous potatoes on the bottom, and they're very
I
good.
really like that.
I do. Like Boise knows what it's about, and it's just very like I'm here and I'm square, and
What's
I love it.
California's license plate? Like, what do you guys get?
Oh, it's so boring. The like the default is just white with red California.
No.
Like, it's so boring, especially coming from Maryland, which has always had, like, my whole life has had a wide variety of them. Like, there's a blue one with, like, a stork on it that's Save the
Oh.
Chesapeake Bay. The current one has a big, like, the flag behind it, and the Maryland flag is obnoxious. It is obnoxious. And when I was in high school, there was a big in 2012 they had a special like War of 1812 Star Spangled Banner one
Commemorative.
commemorative that was like very fireworks red white and blue Frederick
That's good.
Keyes. Maryland goes all out. I really love my home state.
Yeah, I love that. As you can imagine, Georgia's default is just a giant ass peach and then like maybe like a magnolia blossom, which is not even our state flower, but you know, they're like maybe a little taste of something.
I know. It's a lot nicer than the South Carolina one, which is just like the tree and the moon, right? It's
Yeah.
very.
The Hilton Head kind of vibe.
The next image in mine is called Uninvited Guests. His heart was pounding. He was sure he had seen the doorknob turn. And this is another one where, like, there's just so much visual information in a moment of like complete stillness. It's the stairs going into a basement. There's like a carpet folded up. There's like stacks of newspaper. There's an ice skate hanging on the wall. And this little shaft of light from a window, it's so perfect, is shining onto a tiny door at the bottom of a wall with a little doorknob. I love it.
Yeah, and it looks like, because he's saying like I'm sure he had seen the doorknob turn. This feels like a door that's been there for a long time. So I don't know if it's like it was part of the house and it's always been dormant, or like this little guy just popped up, but like we feel in elves, we feel in something mischievous, the borrowers, you know.
It's something, it's odd because it's this meeting of things of like it's sinister, it's weird that something is moving, that there's something new, but it's also small. Like how threatening could anything, you know,
He
under a
was
foot tall be?
Yeah, the little details, it's just what took you there to include these specifically? Or does it mean nothing? It's just set dressing, you know?
I can't quite make it out in mine. On the bottom left corner in the darkness, there's something sort of circular. Again, it might just be, like you said, set dressing.
It kind of looks like an old school, like 1940s radio, maybe, or some kind
Oh,
of clock.
yeah.
And then I guess some kind of stack of newspapers or something beside it.
Yeah. It again, like it feels very like grandparents' house. It feels kind of like you're snooping, but also like when I was really young, I was afraid of going into our basement. It
Oh,
sort of feels
same.
like that.
You gotta run up the steps. I mean, I still do that sometimes.
We moved when I was in like third grade to a different house, but the house I was super young in, the stairs into the basement, I might have said this on the podcast, had gaps in between each stair.
Oh, like you could like see through.
Yes. And I started watching ET once. My parents were like, this is a classic film. You have to watch it. And I was like, that is a booger man, and I don't like him.
Looks like he's made out of Arby's roast beef. I don't like ET at all. So scary.
I became convinced that, like, if I went downstairs, his little booger arms, his little roast beef arms would come grab me through the little slot.
And you were probably right.
I mean, I think he, again, I did not finish the movie. I think he lived in the basement. I think he was hiding down there.
For his nefarious plots and schemes.
Exactly. They're doing a lot of assuming to think that he's doesn't have ulterior motives. We don't know any. He could be 90.
Who designed him? Was that Steven Spielberg proper? He's like, this lump is going to get kids going. They're going to be loving it.
I don't know, because it's interesting 40 years later to compare him with Baby Yoda. What succeeded and what didn't. And I think the big difference might be eyes. It might be
Oh, for
that
sure.
Baby Yoda can fit in a pocket where ET might weigh the same as I do. Like, we could
ET's
be.
solid mass.
Exactly.
Unmovable.
Like, I know he's a puppet, so in my mind, I'm like, he can't weigh that much, but he looks globby.
Thick bones.
He cannot fly. You try to throw him and he just sinks.
My God. It's
Like
like a buoy.
craters, you
Ugh. Yeah, I think
know?
Baby Yoda, it's the big eyes. Tiny hands are also less scary, I think, you know?
Yes. They're baby-like hands. They're very stubby, where I feel like ET is very long,
Also, the
skinny
voice.
fingers.
E.T. smokes several packs a day.
ET, I think like ET, in my mind, is always that image where they like dress him up as an old lady. And it's
Yes.
like, but I see this old lady. Like, there's something, again, it's like, it's a little too close to real.
Yeah. Uncanny Valley for sure. Like the old Navy mannequins.
Okay,
Sorry.
say more. Do I not know
Do
the
you remember like the period? It was like late 2000s, early 2010s, where the old Navy commercials were like the mannequins speaking to one another and having barbecues in like a whole neighborhood. And there was like, they had like a microcosm of their own environment. They have the mouths that are way too wide. So it just always looks like they're yelling. I don't know.
It's a deep cut, but I'm happy for it.
Thanks for letting me share.
The next one is called The Harp, and it says, "So it's true," he thought. "It's really true." It's this beautiful woodland landscape with a creek running through it, a little harp in the foreground, and in the background, is that like a young boy with maybe a walking stick and a dog?
Little doggy, yeah. And yeah. It's like A-framed by two like very beautiful trees. Like it's very classic picturesque.
Yeah. There's, and I think that startled, or not startled, but struck me is the breadth of genres between this. This feels like pure fantasy, Narnia in the woods, whimsy.
Like part of me wonders if he just wanted to show off of like, here's all the things that I can draw.
Which is genius. If you're I need to make a portfolio piece. It's a great one. And I do, it's like the epitome of less is more. It's like, why try to tell a story when instead I can give these hints and your mind is going to do so much more. Like that's the, you know, the thing about Jaws is the shark is always scarier when you're only seeing a fin or the wake rather than the whole thing itself.
Classic horror rule. Yeah. There's also an interesting detail of like by the actual harp, we're seeing like a ripple effect within the water. So either something was just thrown there or there's something bubbling beneath there. So maybe something's trying to protect it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the incredible stillness of the image, but that movement and that motion.
Yeah. You ever seen someone play a harp in person?
Maybe.
Oh, I have. I feel like they're pretty rare.
Yeah. My parents were in community band all throughout my childhood.
Honestly love that. That's so sweet.
So that's how they met was my mom was in college in Lexington, Kentucky. And because my mom is like a 20-year-old flute player and my dad's this like guy coming in with a bassoon.
Of course she was a flute player. It's always the flute players that are either like the meanest people you ever met or like the most graceful, elegant, beautiful women on earth.
But she also plays piccolo. She used to play organ.
You could do like a full 60, 70 minutes just on your family tree. We're going to be chatting about that more at some point soon.
Yes, yes, yes. The next image is one of the ones that stuck with me the most.
Oh, love this one.
It's called Mr. Linden's Library. He had warned her about the book. Now it was too late. And it's this girl asleep in bed. It's night. Her lamp is still on. She's got a book open. And there are vines, leafy vines, growing out of the book and starting to touch her wrist. It screams Annihilation by Jeff Vandermeer.
100%.
He's one of my favorite authors. Those books are phenomenal. Absolutely required reading.
Absolutely. I mean, when I first saw this as a kid, I always interpreted it as like, the vines were either had already grown before she had fallen asleep or passed out or died or whatever you want to interpret here. And then touching them is what made her like lose consciousness. Mm. But I also, there's an element of like, she was reading and she happened to fall asleep and the book's taking over while she's still.
Yeah, that's how I read it.
Yeah. I feel like that's the more interesting.
Right. And there's something Sissy Spacek about her face.
Yeah, that's so true.
Let's put her in the movie.
I would love for her to play your grandma on something. I feel like you guys could have great chemistry.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Have you seen Crimes of the Heart?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a fantastic movie.
It's just captivating. Like there's something about who she is on a screen that is just, it's one of those things you can't teach, you know?
Yeah. She's amazing. And Crimes of the Heart is just like, I've only seen it once or twice, but it's a combination of like, oh, this is my family. Like, this is my heritage.
Sure.
And just a very specific sense of humor. Like it might be Sissy Spacek's character. I'm not sure. And a second suicide shout out on the pod, but there's a moment where she tries to hang herself from a chandelier and it falls. And then she is like wandering around the house with the noose and the chandelier trailing behind her. It's hilarious.
Yeah, that movie is shockingly good. That's also a play, right?
Yeah.
Because from what I remember, I've seen the movie, I've read the play. I think the movie honestly does a better job capturing the tone than the play does, but maybe that's really? Just basic being in it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that cat, it's also like, I think Diane Lane and Jessica Lange and Sam Shepard, I think.
Oh, they just got the whole gang together.
Yeah. They're just like, let's kill it. It was, that's a great movie. I also love, like, I say it lovingly, I do come from like a slightly white trash family. And so things like that and like, Joe Dirt. That's my heritage. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. No, totally get it.
Yeah, that's America. It's something really interesting to like both my parents moved to DC in the 80s and were like, we have to unlearn our accents because
Wow.
people are like, well, and technically, I think the big moment was like they came to DC and then eventually, after a few years, my dad got a job in London. And so my mom was like working as a secretary in London answering phones. And people were like, what the fuck are you saying? Because you're
Which is
from,
crazy because the
yeah.
amount of like true English, like from Great Britain dialects that are just as unintelligible as any Southern accent, like it's just classism, you know?
Yeah, it's an odd line to find. So like what I mean is that like my mom does a lot to like separate themselves from it. Like my mom hates when my dad uses a toothpick because she says when people would come over and we didn't want to feed them, my mom would send us all onto the porch with toothpicks so it looked like we already ate dinner so they wouldn't ask us for food.
That's fascinating. Also,
Right?
like, kind of a great psychological trick.
Margaret, my grandmother, was a terrible person, but had little moments where you're like, fascinating.
There's something cooking there.
Exactly.
I was just gonna say, I totally get the accent thing because I mean, like, I was raised in the South. My family was from the North, but like, I still grew up with an accent, like, still picked up on a lot of, like, I consider the South very much my home, which took a long time to process, but here we are. But when
Yeah.
I went to acting school, like when I was 18, 19, like as a freshman, they were like, the first thing you need to do is unlearn your accent, which I never even had a heavy one. But like the first thing
Yeah.
they had to do is they're like, you sound cheap. Like people are not going to cast you. Like you don't, there's no elegance to how you speak. And like, you know, having transferred schools and grown up and a lot of time has passed since then, like I'm trying to reclaim a lot of those words and sounds because good God, why would I want to give that away, you know?
Yeah. When you're 18 and you're being told, like, you sound unelegant,
Right,
yeah,
you
it
sound
could.
stupid, essentially. Just
Exactly. It stays with you for a long time. The next one is one of my favorites
I love
because
the
I
very you.
know I have a fascination with nuns and with religion in a broader sense, but specifically with nuns. I'm writing a horror movie about a nun, and this image is called The Seven Chairs. The caption is, "The fifth one ended up in France." And the image is this incredible Gothic cathedral. A nun is floating in a chair, probably 10 feet in the air, and there are two bishops, two fancy clergymen.
Yeah, little fancy like pom-pom looking hats. I couldn't even tell you like what their rank is, but
No, but they're standing there, hands behind their back, looking at her. And I love this. I love this image so much. I love that it's a nun. I love the amount of light in this image.
yeah.
And I love the idea, seven chairs, the fifth one ended up in France, things scattered to the wind with magical powers, having to collect them all. It's delicious. It's delightful. I love
Also,
it.
no reactions from anyone in the photos. Like the people watching her, there's no shock. There's no like raising of their hands. Like there's no kind of expression. Her expression's neutral in the chair. People are all just like I don't know. Maybe they assumed it was a miracle. It's a thought from God. People are just chilling.
To me, I read it as like, this has happened a lot. Like, these guys have heard
Yeah,
that
this
she
is
can
not
do
normal.
this. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Here we go. And we're doing the chair check. What do you guys think?
This picture
Yeah.
very much feels like a 30 Rock cutaway, you know, like a second gag that I was thinking about for the rest of the day.
There's also like, I think a lot about, I've done a lot of research and I'm continuing to do research in particularly anchoresses. Like, I've read Julian of Norwich's book. And I'm learning about like Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz and all these different people. And I think like Teresa of Avila and Marjorie Kemp. And what's interesting is like when you are a woman in the church gaining power and like proposing new ideas, you always have to do this process of like undercutting yourself. So like Julian of Norwich writes this amazing book that's basically like there is no such thing as sin. God is love. Like everything that you do is because God wants you to. And like he pushes you away so you can have a greater return. It's gorgeous. And the whole time she was like, but I'm just a silly little lady. But I only get this from God, and I know smarter people will have smarter thoughts. This is just what I think, and I'm just a silly little girl. And it's fascinating, like how you have to.
It's
It's
honestly
just
like a
about,
safety measure for her.
yes,
Yeah.
100%. Yeah,
Wow, you need to send me
fascinating.
the name of that. That's beautiful.
The next one. This one is sort of odd. It's like whimsical, but a little unnerving. It's
Yeah.
called The Third Floor Bedroom. It all began when someone left the window open. And it's an open window. The curtains are blowing gently in the breeze. And the wallpaper is all of these birds. And in the pattern, there's one missing. And the one next to the missing space, it's like the bird's wing has started to peel off, like it's about to take flight from the wall. I love it.
Wallpaper always fascinated me as a kid. I feel like just because, you know, we grew up in the 90s, so like nobody was trying to do anything with walls. It was all like clean lines and like bare walls and like warm colors. But like going back to my grandparents' house or, you know, seeing like people's powder rooms where like wallpaper was still a thing. It always, I don't know, there's something about like letting a room be busy with pattern. It's interesting. But also the idea that like, it's like little paintings or glimpses of images that have been frozen in time like this. And so the idea that something is breaking out of that is, you know, I feel like that plays on like a very common childhood.
Yeah, it feels sort of Toy Story to me of the things in your room coming to life. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I love that you say that because, yeah, like I would get yelled at for like putting a sticker on a desk. Like it felt like adornment was not allowed. The only like wallpaper we ever had was when I was really young. It would be in the kids' room. So we had like not a whole wall, but like a banner of wall that went around. You know, it was like a foot tall maybe. And I think we only had two when I was really, really young. It was Sandra Boynton illustrations. I love Sandra Boynton.
So nostalgic. Just really lovely stuff.
Yeah, she was like a core piece of my childhood was her artwork. So it was all like barn animals. And then after that, I had the same thing, but it was Disney princesses, which is very 90s.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Who was your princess of choice, by the way?
Oh, Belle, of course. Who was yours?
Jasmine. Yeah.
Oh.
I liked her nose.
Wow.
And I wanted to be for every Halloween. And I was like, you know, I should get a tan. And my parents were like, don't worry about that, actually.
Maybe they were onto something, you know?
Yeah,
maybe.
I'm glad. Looking back, I'm glad.
I love like astrology of like who your Disney princess was. I was just talking to my boyfriend. I didn't realize that he used to watch Doctor Who. But if you watch Doctor Who, like who your doctor is, finding out who his doctor was, I was like, this is mind blowing and also perfect. This makes complete sense.
Who was
I love it. It was Christopher Eccleston.
See, and now that's a sleeper hit, truly.
Exactly.
I think he gets the respect that he deserves, quite frankly.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And also, like, for my boyfriend, I'm like, that makes complete... Mine is Matt Smith, but it makes complete sense.
Sure. Were you a Super Hulock girly?
No, I never really got Sherlock. Like, I watched it, and I think I was... I think I just have issues with Sherlock Holmes as a character. I think he's not fun.
Yeah, no. And, I mean, they did not try to make Benedict's version fun. They just said we were banking on the fact that people are going to think he's hot.
And I never got that. I was like, this guy's annoying and mean. I think it was just very dry for me. And I was into Supernatural, but it was tertiary. It was lower. And Doctor Who was the thing.
There was just too much going on with Supernatural for me to like get. I was like, I can't find my foot in. Like, I don't know, you know?
Yeah. And it just kept going. It just ended. It just ended.
What are we doing, guys?
Like those guys are just on like maybe their second project after that at this point. They've had 5 minutes. The next one might be my favorite. Halloween. It's called Just Desert, by the way.
Crazy.
So important. She lowered the knife and it grew even brighter. The image is extremely dark. It's of this woman with this chic bob.
Under eyeliner, right.
Oh, you're right. And she's wearing an apron. She's in a kitchen. There's a huge rolling pin. She's holding a knife to an absolutely radioactive pumpkin about to cut in. And her eyes are terrified. This might be my favorite. I love this image.
You could make such a cool tattoo, honestly.
Oh,
yeah, the Just Desert, that's what's always puzzled me. What is going on there? Like, is there like an implication? Maybe she's never grown anything before. Like, it's always been barren. And then this thing shows up.
Oh,
I would love that twist.
Yeah. I just think of it as like, maybe this is how you learn desert versus dessert. I didn't learn that difference until 7th grade.
The thought of like the second S is like your second helping of dessert.
I was taught it's 2 S's because you want it to last longer. It's like dessert because you want more dessert and you want less desert. You're like, get out of there.
This one feels like it's moving. Like a lot of the images feel really stagnant, but like even if you take a look at the hand that's holding the knife, it's blurred in such a way that it's like we caught her mid-action.
Yeah.
The other pictures have in that same quality.
And her other hand, she's not touching it. She's like sort of hovering over it. so cool because you want to go cut it, but you don't actually want to touch it. It's this great, there's, I think the best ones of these have a lot of tension in them.
Absolutely. You think this thing's making noise?
Oh yeah, it's like And then this one is not one of my favorites. I think it's cute and sweet, but it's
about this one quite
funny. Exactly. It's forgettable. It's called Captain Tory, and it goes, he swung his lantern 3 times and slowly the schooner appeared. And it's a very typical, he looks like Willem Dafoe in The Lighthouse with a little boy on a street next to a river with a boat sort of coming into, it seems like the boat has just materialized out of the mist. And I think it, like, this feels, yeah, like very Narnia. Like I can, like you were saying, like this would be an easy one to jump into,
yeah,
as starting to write the first chapter.
A lot of boat content with this guy, a lot of sailor references.
You're right. I didn't pick up on that. A lot of boat content.
This feels very like European though. My first thought looking at this was like, oh, Paris. Like it's the
Paris.
Same.
Exactly. That was exactly what I thought. I think the only thing kind of menacing about this image is that it's nighttime, which is always vaguely menacing to me, apparently.
It's misty. And this guy loves drawing some mist.
He does. It's very, very gray, except for that lantern.
Very ghost ship, you know.
Very. One of my boyfriend's favorite phrases right now to work into conversation is, well, you best start believing you're blank because you're in one, Miss Turner.
The first Parts of the Caribbean movie might be a perfect movie.
It might be. The next one is called Oscar and Alphonse.
Love.
She knew it was time to send them back. The caterpillar softly wiggled in her hand, spelling out goodbye. And the image is this girl. It's maybe like the brightest, one of the brightest images. She's standing in front of a forest. There's really tall grass. She's looking forlornly into her hand. And there's, I mean, they just kind of look like pellets, but there's two little sort of vaguely caterpillar shapes in her hand.
And she looks just like Hilary Swank.
Yeah. And she's in, like, there's something, I think the, maybe in the introduction, they say something about like 30 years ago, these images popped up. So that would put it roughly in the 50s. And she is in, like, I mean, she looks like she's going to the office, even though she's 7. Starchy white button up and a dark skirt, probably a hefty wool.
Not starchy.
Yeah. Yeah, she looks very forlorn. She's being called in to come wash her hands for dinner or something. It's the last days of summer. Yeah.
It's definitely summer. The glowy, hazy vibe is fully summer.
Yeah.
I like the name choices of Oscar and Alphonse for the two caterpillars.
Yes. Yeah, there's something so perfect about that, of how kids name things, of Alphonse.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. That's so real. Like wanting to name everything like Antonio or something. That
yes.
Just...
But I feel like on the other end, like Oscar is just kind of pedestrian enough. Like I, very innovative child, not very innovative name convention. My teddy bear was named Teddy.
Mine was named Sam. Like, okay.
Perfect. Got it. Good. Here we go.
It's like, you know how we were in like third or fourth grade and the funniest thing you could do was name something Bob.
Oh yeah.
Very like random taco.
I've been thinking about that a lot.
People also don't get like, hello, my name is Joe and I work in a button factory. Like they weren't in the mines like I was in the mines.
They just don't get it. Like that's something I like when the internet was new and it was just weird. Like it was like a Charlie the Unicorn and like things got big, not because they were necessarily funny. They were just odd.
And they just existed. Like it was just new content because there wasn't enough content around you yet.
Yeah. It's sort of like, well, why was like Charlie bit my finger on like Good Morning America? It's like, cause that was all there was.
Scholarships.
Yeah. It was really easy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You could do anything then.
And the last image, this is the Stephen King one. It's just so succinct. It's called The House on Maple Street. The caption is, it was a perfect liftoff. It's 5 words, 6, if you want to say it, it's a compound word with a hyphen in it, if you want to get technical. And the image is just this very classic suburban house on Maple Street on a dark night, lifting up into the sky with a giant beam of light underneath it.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the most perfect part of this image to me is the dark mailbox in the foreground across, like creating that contrast. There's a tree being knocked over.
It does surprise me that this is the one Stephen King chose to do.
Yeah.
Because this feels, again, this feels hopeful to me. There's only one light on in the whole house, and it's in like the attic or like the very top room.
Like we were talking about with Marvel. There are consequences implied here, but it's just a tree. And it's like, that tree is going to be okay.
Yeah, like there's a house very close next to it in this photo, and it's completely unaffected.
It's fine. There's a car parked right there. Its alarms are not going off. But it also, it feels like that Twilight Zone episode that's all about, that might also be Maple Street.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, very Norman Rockwell, very typical American suburb.
This one feels very cut and dry. Like, this is very much like, if I was a 5-year-old staring at a house for too long, I would just imagine this happening in my head, you know?
Yeah. How do you feel about it being the last one?
I don't know. Like, I understand it for this in the sense of, like, it has the finale aspect, right? Like, this one beautiful big explosion or rocket shooting up in the air. That feels like very, like a good send-off, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's a little sad considering that everything else is so like deeply captivating and horrific. I would want something that leaves a little bit more mystery.
Yeah, I think it is like, it's like the another time, another place one where they're going into like the distance.
Sure.
Where it's sort of like, oh, a beautiful journey is about to begin. And I think those, at least for us, are not the most satisfying, but it makes sense that that's the end.
It gives it a little bit more hope, which I guess if you're anchoring this as a kid's book, it makes sense to keep that way. So, I mean, I get it.
Yeah. It feels E.T. It feels Close Encounters to me. Yeah. There's something very, even though the images feel very 50s, there's something so deeply 80s about this that I love.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's John Hughes. It's Goosebumps. It's like just R.L. Stine in general. I'm not going to pretend to know the difference between Goosebumps and Fear Street other than I watch the Netflix movies.
Those were crazy movies. Yeah.
Yeah. I had fun. Like, I enjoyed myself.
I think the bread slicer death is one of the best in the, like, the past 15, 20 years of horror. I think it was inventive and fun.
Yeah.
Were you ever a scary stories to tell in the dark kid?
No. All I have ever interacted with was the movie in 2019.
I can't lie. I love the movie.
It was the first movie I ever saw in theaters with my boyfriend. But it was, yeah, it was just sort of like, okay, it's great. Lana Del Rey cover of Season of the Witch.
I mean, it's a stupid movie, but it feels like a great entry level for like a kid that's interested.
Yes.
In things, you know, there's a few good jump scares. The stories themselves are good.
Yeah.
The things that go with that book are terrifying. Like, I think that was like, that's the scarier, like older cousin of Goosebumps.
Right. Oh, yeah. I never had that. I had like a book of like scary campfire stories that I don't know how we got that. Fascinating.
Fascinating.
Well, would you consider it required reading?
I think it's kind of a trick question because it's truly not a lot of reading.
No.
But I mean, this was essential for me growing up. And I think even we've talked a lot about horror and spooky things, but I even think outside of that, this is just important. It's such a perfect format for letting kids have imagination and let them feel ownership over that.
Yeah.
So I would consider it required reading.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think it is just so fun and inventive and such a great invitation to read, to write, to draw, to imagine. I think any book that feels like an invitation or a gift from the author to the child, I think automatically to me becomes required reading. And this feels like that upside down.
That's really lovely. It absolutely is a gift.
It's one of those ones where it's like, oh, I wish I had this classroom exercise. I think like a lot of picture books can have like, you can feel what the teacher's about to say when they close it and say like, here's what we're going to do today. And I think this one feels like the most exciting one.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
And when we did this in fourth grade, like obviously he showed us the actual book, like he was reading it in front of us, but we also had a projector and he had like slides of every photo and was putting that. So like the classroom was dark and we were getting the images, you know, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah. There's something about like, October of fourth grade for us that like is so,
you're coming home like your mom maybe just baked something so the oven still smells good. It's a candle oven.
Yeah, Halloween Town's on.
Yeah, it's just that level of nostalgia that you're never going to get again, but I will spend my whole adult life chasing.
I loved this book. Thank you so much for bringing this into my life.
my gosh, thanks for letting me talk about it. I love you. You're such a delight to speak to. This was so
Thank
fun.
you. You too. Well, do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Not really. I'm not doing anything. Everything I'm doing is local to Georgia. Feel free to follow me at Delaney Searcy on all my things to hear my ramblings and such.
I love it. Amazing. Well, thank you so much. Have a good Labor Day.
You too, Erin.
Thank you so much to Delaney, and thank you so much for listening. If you would like to support the podcast, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/required reading. It is a pay what you can option. Next week is going to be a little fun. It's going to be a little different. And is that all? My name is Erin Bowles. You can find me everywhere at Erin R. Bowles. The R stands for return, because in a few days I'm returning to my parents' house, and I feel like that's just going to be very fun and fruitful and freshening. Thank you so much.